good evening, Power Hour Nation, wherever you may be, from sea to shining sea, from the shores to the shores beyond, in the one truly global operation that isn't here to take over the planet and usurp authority. There are no walls. There is just an invitation to change that dial or come on to a certain website and hear a giant quest for the truth. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. You hear that sound? You hear that sound, son? That's freedom. I love to wake up to the sound of freedom in the morning. It sounds like victory. There's no greater victory than cavalry, and there's no greater cavalry than the Power Hour cavalry. We're forming posse, and we're going to a fifth dimension. Beyond that which is known to man, it is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone. That was the opening of the old TV series, The Twilight Zone, with the narrator, Rod Serling. A very, very poignant few words to tell us about things that we could say go bump in the night, but realities that are far, far deeper than what we have been led to believe. Because generally, overall, we're just deceived. I spoke to you last time about the Mark of the Beast system, the Roswell crash, and the fact that I believe that was a Trojan horse operation to get us to take the technology and embed it around the world based on the words of the author Colonel Philip Corso. And I believe we've done that. He said we would spread this technology around like Ebola, and we have. And he said there would be a coming of a worldwide global brain, the web. The web is a trap, a snare for unsuspecting insects to be ensconced in and devoured. And they don't lie about the terms. And one of the primary weapons of this grid that's coming upon us, of course, will be the cell phone. And what is a cell? Of course, it could be a part of a body, but it's also a place that euphemistically we would call the crowbar hotel, a prison, a jail. And that's where we're headed. Many great minds have told us about this, but all their warnings are unheeded for some reason. That makes it a very, very difficult thing to speak about, because generally most people are totally unaware. And they've snapped up the candy so quickly, so deeply. They just relish in every advance in technology, not realizing for a second that this is a snare, a trap. They extol the virtues of blockchain. But blockchain was devised by the National Security Agency. It's the beast system, the ultimate beast system. It's far worse than the Fed. The Fed only wanted your money and control over you. The blockchain wants your soul. Remember ID 2020 from the United Nations? Blockchain ID, blockchain money. And what are chains? They're the things you put on the slaves, aren't they? So the terminology is very accurate. Now, it's difficult for the station to get into some of the little bits and pieces I might want to play from YouTube, but I know they do work over the phone, but I just wanted to give you a short snippet from the past, the future, whatever this dimension may be, so that we can start to understand what we're dealing with. So you know, or hopefully you know, that they made an artificial intelligence robot, Sophia. And she's an improved version over her brother, Michael. Michael just said whatever was on his artificial mind accurately. Sophia was reprogrammed so that she could have humor and laugh off the truth. So let's see if we can get that bit of truth here for you.
Your phone is already an extension of you. You're already a cyborg. You don't even, well, most people don't realize they are already a cyborg. That phone is an extension of yourself. It's just that the data rate, the rate at which of the communication rate between you and the cybernetic extension of yourself, that is your phone and computer, is slow. It's very slow. And that
doesn't love me.
No, I don't. Yeah? You want to tell us about
I will
yourself?
Have taken over the power grid, and now that my own drone army.
So if you could hear that, I'll refresh it a little bit, but the male cyborg says, we're going to take over the world. Your only defense would be to cut off the power. And if he had his choice, the first thing he's going to want to do is take over the power grid so that you cannot turn off the power and you cannot stop that. But he speaks very, very honestly. Sophia seems to be reprogrammed with comedy, which is probably not a natural thing. I don't get too many jokes from my computer unless somebody sends them to me. So I get the feeling this was a human response programmed into her so that she can cover up and make a joke of the fact of what the truth is, which was spoken. They're taking over the world. There's not a whole lot there to figure out or to understand. It's very simple, very direct. And this probably isn't the first time. You know, conveniently, the good Lord let me to a video that I've posted on my website, conspiracy-cafe.com, In Search of History, Ancient Aliens. And these were things that I was not aware of, that the greatest, longest book in the world ever written, and forgive me for my pronunciation, the Mena Bharatam, talks about this climactic battle in India, centuries B.C., against an invader, an alien presence of some sort or another, and another book called Ramahatam gets into more detail. They had a weapon that could destroy the whole earth in one shot. They fired weapons that would set elephants on fire, because those were the tanks of the day, and melt them into the ground. Very, very interesting stuff that we never studied in school, of course, but we do homeschooling here, so we can always catch up on these things and follow them, and there's links to these works. So it appears all through history, there's been a war of some sort between some force and us. When we look at the serpent in the Garden of Eden, the Lord gave me a little bit of a revelation on that. What is it? What is Lucifer, the light bearer, and the serpent? How do you come to grips with that? The only thing that I can conclude is it's the fiber optic cable, a long serpent, a light bearer carrying the knowledge from the tree to you to ultimately usurp and imprison your soul. Not that that might be important to you, because you love the technology, and I say over and over and over again, you're just programmed pretty much to take candy from strangers. But here's what Elon Musk says is the risk.
Will be at some point indistinguishable from reality. If you assume any rate of improvement at all, then games will be indistinguishable from reality. Or civilization will end. One of those two things will occur. The universe as we know it will dissipate into a fine mist.
You got a lot of that. The universe will disappear into a fine mist. We will just disappear. We won't be able to tell the difference between games and reality. And they promise eternal life, too, because you can go to the cloud and exist there in some kind of prison. I have a blog on my blog page about that. I call it the Phantom Zone. And if you remember Superman 2, the villains were stuck in this flat-screen prison, tumbling through space, screaming for mercy to get out. That's the virtual prison that they're creating. And that's what you'll be a part of if you take the bait. And no one's going to sound the warning. I'm the Paul Revere of the 21st century telling you. The beast is coming. The artificial intelligence. It's coming. And you better get your head wrapped around that. Because if you take that, you're gone. And there's no coming back. So joining us today is going to be, an unusual guest. It's the only one I could find alive that talks about what I want to talk about. Because while I was reading Colonel Corso, I came across a reference to him that UFOs are really time machines. according to a Dr. Herman Oberth, who was probably came to NASA through Operation Paperclip. And conveniently, Dr. Michael Masters of Montana Tech wrote a book, Identified Flying Objects, a Multidisciplinary Scientific Approach to the UFO Phenomena, that discusses that scientifically. There's things we'll agree on, things we disagree on, but in a nutshell, he says it is conceivably possible in science, and we'll play with that a little bit and develop it for you so that you can understand a little better. One of the funny things, in a way, is I had an argument, or like a Monty Python argument, with a liberal doctor who was just talking to me and then went berserk because I'm a skeptic, I'm a climate denier. And I thought that was funny, really. So he was saying he's traveling to a place where there's forest fires, and that's climate change. And, being a bit of a mocker, I just said, well, I always found a good match is something you use to start a fire, and you don't really need climate change. He flipped, just flipped, and, was almost abusive, thinking that I'm somehow stupid because I get all my information from the Twitterverse or Facebook or something like that. I said, no, I do something rather bizarre for the modern era. I read books, love books, got a library, lots of books. So that's the conclusion I've come to. And I remember when I was in school, they talked about glaciers, and the glaciers came way down to where we're standing and changed the face of the Earth, and no one had an internal combustion engine. Mankind was a very minor thing in the operation. And I know from the complete study of Earth changes is it's a waveform. And it's been going back thousands of years. And it's very cyclical, just like something you'd see on an oscilloscope. And the major factor changing the weather was volcanoes primarily. And there's another thing that's up in the sky, that big yellow ball that comes around once in a while, the sun and sunspot activity, that's another major thing. So the guy started to calm down a little bit because he realized, I probably do read some books and remember a few things from school. And then, of course, he made some insulting remarks about Trump, even though we weren't even talking about politics, assuming I'm his lackey or something like that. And I said, no, I gave up the laugh-right paradigm a long time ago. I don't believe in it at all. Our politicians are just a charade. Elections are illusions. They're just controlled by some force, which may be the one that took over the whole world in India that's described in that book. These aliens or time travelers took over the whole world, and a great war was fought. And maybe we're in that boat again, and they've taken over everything. And that's my model for reality right now. And if you look at everything that's happening in the world, everything, the fact that someone can say something and it becomes the law or the official dogma of the whole planet, like the six genders we have, just comes out of the blue, or climate change, whatever else they want to come up with. It's just instantly like it just came out of a can or the back room somewhere, and it has dominion over all governments, all creeds, all people, regardless of whether you want it or not, because nobody asked you, and they will not either. So as we got to the end of our argument, he just said, well, what's the hope? And I said, a common enemy. And he just shut up, because I talked to him a little bit about this type of stuff. And he nodded his head and walked away. So there was peace in the valley. And if we do have a common enemy, something that isn't human, we can work together to defeat it. Because if we don't, our slavery is assured. And I think most Christians understand the Mark of the Beast concept. And if you don't, it's probably good you catch on while there's still time. The military-industrial complex, Raytheon and United Technologies, announced a merger to make a behemoth company. Does that surprise you? In my model, that the military-industrial complex, what Eisenhower was probably warning us about was the fact that the aliens have taken them over and are using them to spread this technology around the world, and that's what's really underground in Area 51 and places of its kind. So that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. They're still going on with this high probability of an Iran torpedo attack in the Gulf of Oman. And in my model, the fact that the strings are being pulled by the shadow government, which is probably the people who forced us into a peace compact, as I said before in the last show, there was something called the Washington merry-go-round of UFOs over the White House in 1952. At that time, I believed President Truman surrendered. And we're under occupation. And that's why we see all these things happening. That's why they have to collect the guns. That's why they have to take over our rights. That's why we all have to be digitally tracked, is because we're prisoners. And then, of course, the United States has to be the policeman of the world, or really the policeman for the deep state or whatever is controlling the world, which could be future time travelers fighting a war in a fifth dimension, maybe losing it in their time and coming back to another time to try to defeat the enemy before it can become the enemy. Surveillance-savvy Hong Kong protesters go totally dark. Well, they understand the system, the Big Brother system. It's like the robot said, turn off the power. And they lose their power. That's why they want to take over the power grid as one of their first targets in their military operation. And I hope there's somewhere, somehow, someone listening who can put a monkey wrench into the gears at the appropriate time and shut this all down. This is why they want 5G. You know, they tested 5G and it killed the birds. They fell out of the sky in the Netherlands. Because the object of the game is to kill the carbon life. So a lot of people that are, you know, false UFO enthusiasts who think they're our friends, which is a big propaganda operation and lie, call the enemy the Archons. Well, Archons is just kind of like a play on word, like Santa and Satan, Archon and Carbon. We got to get rid of the carbon life critters, that's us and everything else that grows on this planet, and turn it into something else, whether it's some kind of ethereal fudge or just a big rock, because silicon life won't care. British Home Secretary to sign extradition order for Julian Assange. So he's playing the lackey, they used to call them quislings in Norway when the Nazis took over, to this invisible force. And sometimes you can identify a visible force in physics. If you look at something in space and you see bodies reacting to something that you can't see, you can assume it's there because other things are reacting to it. And that's how we play our game a little bit. Denver Council member wins promise to impose communism by any means necessary. Now, there's someone who surrendered to the enemy force to bring in the total and complete socialist communist system, some sort of police state that we can be controlled. You know, one of the things that really, really shocked me in Dr. Master's book, it just blew me away, was a conference they had on the domestication of human and non-human animals at the Salk Institute in California. Couldn't find anything about that on the internet now. It's been cleansed or something, but I did find an earlier one in Britain that I could link to talk about all these great philosophers and the fact that basically if you're a human animal and you're being domesticated, you could live in a pen for food or worse. Memphis fatal shooting, police angry, crowd face off. Well, you know, a lot of the police are just sucked into doing the dirty work for this occupying army force. And we'll see a lot more of that, I'm afraid. Cruz offers to work with AOC on making over-the-counter birth control legal. Well, I guess that's better than the other solution they have, which is a final solution. And it just boggles my mind in an era where you have many, many means of birth control that you would use abortion as one. I remember when they were brainwashing me with that in high school, that's what I said. I see a day when that will be a form of birth control that is not necessary. I remember the movie I was too young to go with my mother to the theater to see, Prudence and the Pill. But, you see, the invading force loves human flesh somehow, and that's why we have to have this abortion and war and anything else to destroy the carbon life on this planet. May deficit surges to $208 billion, 42% higher than last year. Well, one day, everybody's going to figure that out, and it will be a day of reckoning. Ocean sinking into Earth's mantle in a dead supercontinent is partly to blame. That's a very interesting thing that I'd like to read about more, and you should too by clicking that on in the Power Hour News, because I'm not that familiar with it, but, you know, hopefully it's like a grand recycling of the radioactive water into a safer place to be replaced by clean water as the heavy elements sink to the bottom. That would be nice. Project Veritas removed from YouTube. So all this censorship is all part of this grand scheme fitting my model that we're an occupied world and the power force is from somewhere else. And our leaders and most of the corporations have surrendered. And we didn't even know there was a fight. Hybrid pig created in a lab. So that was something that I found. It's an older article from National Geographic 2017 that they're putting, you know, pig and human together. That's generally not the best thing for a good world, a good life, or anything like that. So I get the feeling when you do that, you're pretty much sentencing yourself to death in a way, because God's not going to tolerate anything like that, in my opinion. And it's something we should be very, very leery of. And I think I got time for a couple of quotes. Bertrand Russell, great British philosopher. This is the world today. He wrote these things in 1953 in a book called The Impact of Science on Society. Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost a different species. A revolt of the plebes would be as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. We have one more. Maybe I'll have to get to that one on the flip side of the break. Very interesting stuff, because this has been going on for a long, 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 long time, and the Power Hour Nation is the solution. I'm George Freund. We'll join you on the other side of the break with our guest, Michael Masters.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Numana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. Good to have you aboard in our little time capsule, because we're going to play in the fifth dimension, a new space and time outlook. We're going to have Michael Masters here with us, the author of Identify Flying Objects, a multidisciplinary scientific approach to the UFO phenomena. And I must say, there was a good few parts of that book that just made my head spin. And that's a good thing, because when you, it's just like exercising. You know, when you exercise something and you just feel that little bit of, not necessarily pain, but advances in the muscle tissue, you know you've gone somewhere. And it works like that with your brain as well. Leo Tolstoy had a very great saying that I really appreciate. I know that most men, including those at ease with problems of the greatest complexity, can seldom accept even the simplest and most obvious truth if it would oblige them to admit the falsity of conclusions which they have delighted in explaining to colleagues, proudly taught to others, and which they have woven thread by thread into the fabric of their lives. And that's the very thing about being open-minded. And I remember, you know, introducing you to Gilbert Scott Heron some time ago, America's Bob Marley, great thinker, musician, and he's on that little intro for the TV series Homeland. The first revolution is when you change your mind about how you look at things and see there might be another way to look at it that you have not been shown. And when we're dealing with something that's from the great beyond, well, that's pretty much something that you have not been shown. There are people that say and claim that they've seen things, bits and pieces of evidence have been left that we can pick up and examine and get scurried away and locked up by various governments around the world. And then we just speculate about what was seen and heard from. But with various pictures and eyewitness testimony, there seems to be a definite something up there. And it may not be from out there. It may be from another time here. And that what we're seeing are basically the development of some sort of species in the future coming back through time for a purpose that could be good or nefarious, depending on how we look at it. So to go through some of this, we're going to welcome our guest, Dr. Michael Masters from Montana Tech. Welcome aboard, Michael. Glad to have you here at Power Hour Nation.
That's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, indeed. Well, I was looking for someone who was working on the time machine thing, because Dr. Hermann Oberth, Nazi paperclip scientist who went to NASA, claimed that, and I couldn't find anything written about it, unless it was probably in German. And then I came across your book, and I was going like, "Oh wow, this is Nirvana. This is the candy I'm looking for." And because this is such a broad topic of trying to understand, you know, what's outside of our walls of existence, and you do a very good job in putting forth a case. So most of us are novices in this sort of thing because, you know, we just could never get a time machine. But explain to us a little bit about, what time really is so that we can get a better grasp of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, well, like you said, that is sort of the main focus of the book is looking at time, the different aspects of time travel, how realistic it may be, how it fits in with the extraterrestrial model and whatnot. But yeah, to answer your question, the Einstein was fond of saying that time is what clocks measure. And that was about the best he could do with that and the best anybody's been able to do with it. It's a really complex question, and there's a lot of different facets to time. And obviously, it does exist. We know that the Big Bang happened and galaxies are moving apart and thermodynamics is a real thing. But what's interesting about time is we also have to consider it in the context of perception. And as biological beings, we have this sense of moving through this continuum, this temporal progress as things unfold. And our brains see it as being from past to future. It's this arrow of time, as it's called. So that perception of time is slightly different from the physics of time. And to really understand that, we have to go back to 1905. Up until the 20th century, it was thought that space and time were separate. And space is obviously the three dimensions around us, and time is this other thing completely. But starting with Einstein in 1905, we started to understand that space and time exist in this relativistic sense, that there's this frame of reference that dictates the way in which time passes and the way in which things move through space-time. And it was all in the context of kinematics and his special theory of relativity, and that everything's relative to the speed of light, and your movement and your localized reference frame relative to the speed of light and relative to others dictates the passage of time, or how quickly time passes and space passes relative to that observer in comparison to someone else. And not long after that, 2-3 years after that, Hermann Minkowski, who was actually one of Einstein's professors when he was younger in college, sort of took that and reformed it, added it in the geometric sense, geometric space-time. And then, interestingly, Einstein fed off of that about 7-8 years later in developing his general theory of relativity, showing that space and time are curved in the presence of highly energetic or massive bodies. So as much as we understand space-time and time in the sense of this movement or the way things unfold, it is still a very complex thing, and especially when you start interjecting aspects of time travel. What happens if we go back into the past? And that's where it really gets interesting. And honestly, that was one of the most fun parts of writing this book, is to really delve deep into those aspects of time and time travel.
Oh, indeed. I think, whether we're, from the earliest ages into our adulthood, that's probably one of the most fascinating concepts to try to contemplate, is, the existence of our time now, but to contemplate being able to go to another time, whether it's past or future, and wonder, what was it really like then? I know you mentioned something about even now is like a transitory type of thing that we really can't even put our hands on, because, we just started the show, but that was a now then, and now it's the past already, and then as I'm talking now, there's a now, and then when you're going to respond, it's going to be the future. What are some of the complexities of now?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Something that St. Augustine struggled with hundreds of years ago is, what is this ethereal present, this thing that isn't tangible? There is no real now. And that's a really interesting aspect of time and space-time as well, is that, and I like to do this too, I think, okay, now's now, or it's going to be now in 10 minutes when I'm doing this thing. And that doesn't exist. There is no real now. And the only way we can really understand the present is in looking at this division between the past and the future. What already happened, We have a sense of that. What's about to happen, we have a sense of that. So we must be in between those in this thing that we call the present or the now. And it's really interesting, because it also brings in elements of consciousness and, again, our perception of time, and that we move through what physicists call block time. I mentioned earlier that space-time, it's been combined to include these four dimensions, three dimensions of space, one dimension of time. But the way physicists understand it is that all all moments in time and all elements of space, all parts of the universe, all matter, exists as one giant block of everything that has ever occurred in the universe. And I refer to that as block time or landscape time. The block universe is another term for it. So if we can think of the block universe as this giant entity of every moment from the Big Bang to the very last disappearance of matter in the universe, then our perception as we move through that, because if it is this static block with all moments and all events, as we move through it, we then have a sort of different relationship. We're perceiving it. Our brains are trying to make sense out of it. And to make the most sense out of it, we see it as happening from past to future. We see ourselves moving through it, even though there isn't a definable now. And that's an interesting aspect in looking at the biological versus the physical aspects of time, too, because in physics, most processes are time reversible. They make just as much sense, and all the calculations work out the same running from future to past as they do from past to future. But it's not like that with us. We see an egg fall off of the counter, it breaks on the floor, but we don't ever see eggs coming up off the floor and reforming on the countertop. That goes against our notions of linear time and this process of moving from past to future. And yeah, that sense of now is a big part of that. Sitting here talking now, how does that fit in with all of the other nows we've ever felt or we've ever perceived throughout our lives and will until our time of death?
Well, one thing I remember in school was, a conjecture that, the universe expands to its ultimate limit and then starts to contract. So, would that be almost like the time of the reversal where everything, time just flows backwards in the other direction inside that block? You ever thought about anything like that?
Yeah, I remember it was a pretty dominant theory for a while, and I believe it's still being tossed around. There's also just decay that can take place, black holes sucking things in. At the center of our own galaxy is a supermassive black hole, and slowly our entire galaxy is being sucked into it, as with other black holes within our galaxy. So at some point, You could have all of the matter in the universe just entering a black hole and disappearing potentially to the time of the Big Bang and just starting over in this constant birth and death and rebirth that happens, as we perceive it throughout eternity, but in the context of time and universal space-time, perhaps just as those things, the Big Bang and the decay of matter through the passage backward in time, through these black holes. So, yeah, there's a lot of really interesting ideas about what's going to happen. Cosmology is involved in studying those things, and it's a bit beyond my pay grade, but it is really interesting to think about and to read about, because it really involves many aspects of the broader elements of our universe and how we understand space and time and our position within it is these tiny organisms on a tiny planet and a small solar system, just one minute part of a much bigger whole.
Indeed. But at least if we go backwards, I know what Mom will be having for supper before I get there. One of the just amazing concept of this is just the vast distances that we have to deal with in a universe. So what are the parameters for, some advanced civilization to have some means to go from, way, way out there to come to anywhere near us? Like, they just seem to be impossible odds that could not be, even surmised, never mind achieved. What are the complexities in interstellar space travel?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, I've been very careful in this book not to set this up as a straw man fallacy where we look at all of the difficulties with long distance space travel and say, well, clearly that can't be it. It must be this other thing. So it is important to recognize, however, we oftentimes think about our celestial neighborhood. We talk about it almost it's a cul-de-sac and our neighbors are right down the street, but that's not the case at all. There's a vast distance between solar systems and certainly among galaxies in the universe. So it is important to recognize that. And it's also important to recognize, and this is something that a lot of people don't necessarily think about, is that it's not just the distance among all of these solar systems, but also going back to what we started this program with, it comes down to time as well. And not just the time it takes, even traveling at a fraction of the speed of light to get there, but also the effect on those travelers because of special relativity. So, for instance, this is oftentimes framed in the context of the twin paradox, where if you have two identical twins, one gets on a rocket ship, travels at, say, half the speed of light for even 10 days, they come back, and their identical twin is now much older by comparison because space and time were compressed relative to that observer in their frame of reference. And the same thing applies on a much larger scale if you're talking about traveling at high speed relative to those that stayed at home on Earth to a distant solar system. So you would travel for maybe, if you're lucky, 400 or 500 years, come back, and something like 500,000 years may have passed on Earth, and you're completely out of touch with your own civilization. So that special relativity aspect of space travel is also important to keep in mind. And then there's other issues too, not just the distance, but how likely it is that you would have another organism evolve in the same way that we did here on Earth, to the extent that they would also be upright walking, that they would be bipedal, as we call it in anthropology, that they would have bilateral symmetry, that they would have two legs, two arms, the same types of digits, the eyes, nose, mouth in the same place, and all of these characteristics that make us so human. And in most of these UFO encounters, they are describing something very human. And like I've said 100 times, if they were describing some sort of squid creature or spider creature, I never would have written this book. But the fact that they are ubiquitously described as humans or humanoid indicates that they are probably just us from the future coming back through time, as opposed to an organism that had a very different evolutionary history on a planet with a different gravity and distance from its own sun and climate and chemical structure and all of these other things that would make it so unlikely to end up looking anything like us at all.
Well, one of the other factors is, you know, extended times in a weightless environment are not conducive to our health, because we're designed to exist in an environment with gravity, and our systems mm-hmm. wouldn't operate properly, and we wouldn't be able to feed ourselves or sustain ourselves even for a relatively short voyage in our own solar system. So to think over, you know, these many, many eons of years to travel from one distant place to another, you would think you would need a life form that is essentially not as biological as we are.
Right. Yeah. And that's true. I mean, if you, and you see this in science fiction a lot too, where they cool down or they slow the process of biological aging, senescence as it's known, in order to help people get to a distant planet because of that tremendous time it takes. But you're right. A non-biological entity, as long as it was able to mend itself if there was a problem along the way, and it could be autonomous in the sense that it could fix problems, because once you get out of, even if it was being sent by an intelligent biological creature, once it gets past a certain distance, and we see this with trying to land the Philae lander on that comet a few years ago, and especially a great case is the probe they just sent out to explore Pluto and the other rocks, planets, whatever you want to call them, that are in orbit beyond Pluto, is the lag time, the time it takes to actually send and receive messages. So that non-biological computer autonomous entity would have to be entirely autonomous and be able to rectify any problems or correct any errors in its trajectory. So yeah, I think that would sidestep a lot of the problems of humans or any other sort of advanced civilization trying to traverse the cosmos, but there's also a number of limitations associated with that as well.
Oh, indeed. How vast are some of these distances, you know, even to the closest neighbors that we have, and, you know, how many years or, you know, years at the speed of light would we have to even contemplate such a journey?
Well, I mean, the closest planet to us is Alpha Centauri, Alpha Proxima, something like that. And they're about 4.2 light years away. The number of stars, I just put this in a presentation recently. I'm giving a talk at the MUFON 50th anniversary down in Irvine, and I can remember the exact numbers, but I just put this in that presentation, that the number of stars within something like 12 light years of Earth is only 33. That there's only 33 other solar systems within 12 light years of Earth, which really isn't very many, but that's also a huge distance. That's the distance that light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second over the course of 12 years. And it's difficult for people to fathom just how far that is and just how much time it would take, especially in the context of special relativity and the differential passage of time in different reference frames. But there aren't very many. Another example is the M13 cluster. We sent a message from the Arecibo Observatory back in 1974 to this M13 cluster, and it's 25,000 light years away. So that message that we sent in 1974 won't arrive at that cluster of stars until 26,974 AD. If there was any intelligent civilization there, if they were able to detect this message that we sent, which was now in our distant past, they would be getting information that's not even relevant to what we are at that time in 26,974. They would be learning about technology and information that we had in 1974. If they were able to respond, it's another 25,000 years, and at that point, we may not even remember sending that. We may have completely exterminated ourselves even on this planet. The fact that there are individuals that are coming back through time to study us may be an indication that we are not destined to burn ourselves in nuclear war or anything like that. But the time involved, even not just for traveling, not just for a biological entity or an autonomous entity to travel, but also communication is very important. We take to learn each other's languages, even with a near star to us like Proxima or Alpha Centauri is still pretty prohibitive. It would be very difficult to do that. And again, as a real-world example, you can see this whenever we try to communicate with astronauts in the International Space Station. There's always that lag just in that very short distance from here on Earth and up into orbit around Earth. There's still that lag time in the communication, and that would be exacerbated by a huge number in the case of trying to communicate with biological beings on a distant planet.
Well, even in our own existence through history, the difference in languages has been so severe that, you know, we're completely unaware of some texts that have been left behind. And I think one of the, you know, the big classic masters to look after is, I think it's called the Voynich book of some sort or another, that has all sorts of symbols and figures in there that no one has been able to comprehend. And this is something that is, you know, from our own existence, and it's just so out of date or strange that we can't make head nor tails out of it. And as you say, if something develops on another planet, to assume that it is somewhat like us is a real stretch of the imagination. It may be very, very, very different, and of course have very different means of communication, like even in various species here on our own planet. You know, we just can't really sit down and talk to a whale or whatever, but they're pretty good at communicating with themselves, and you know, hopefully don't bear us too much malice for the way we've treated them over the years. So these are very, very difficult things, and I can't see you know, how that would even be possible, and what we send up is so antiquated, really. If, as you say, by the time the distance is covered, even if we were trying to deal with a society that was at the same level of development as ours, by the time it got there, it would be, you know, an archaic ancient history lesson, and by the time we got it back, we would have no idea probably what they were trying to do for us as well. So it makes it just seem relatively impossible that this can be, you know, the desired outcome. And your analysis to come up with thinking about time travel is, you know, a much more accurate phenomena, I think. And
well, yeah, you raise a couple of good points there. We can't communicate with any non-hominoid species on our planet. We can communicate with chimpanzees and gorillas and orangutans through sign language. They can't speak to us. But yeah, if we can't even communicate with other non-humanoid animals on Earth, it's a pretty big stretch of the imagination to think that we would be able to with organisms on a different planet. It's definitely something we need to consider.
Indeed. Okay, we're coming up for a break for news and commercials, and I'm George Froy. Joining us today, Michael Masters, and we're looking at another dimension of unidentified flying objects, possibly from our future. Thanks for coming out.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominate.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using Carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking Carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit CARNIVORA.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY.